with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick Ewing. Basketball is back in New York City, my friend.
The New York Knicks New York select.
What up, people? It's your boy Prez, reporting live from my couch here in Washington, D.C., ready to bring you another episode of Draft Strickland, the greatest spinoff pod in the universe on basketball Twitter. And we have a very, very special first-time guest with us today. It is Anthony Raya. You can find him on Twitter at Anthony R-A-I-A underscore. He founded and runs TLG Sports, and we're here with Anthony today to chop it up and talk about player representation, what that entails, what even happens behind the scenes, because to us on basketball Twitter, we don't really know anything about how any of that stuff works, what being an agent means, you know, what the responsibilities are, what misconceptions dumb Twitter finger people need, like me, have about the biz. So I'm personally very happy to kick it off with our illustrious guest today. Anthony, what's up? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, Prez? How's it going? Thanks for having me.
It's going well. Here in DC, we got some nice fall weather, so I'm in a good mood. It's not humid and gross out. But yeah, like I said in the intro, usually we'll have people on here from, you know, draft Twitter, basketball Twitter, Knicks Twitter, other Knicks fans, writers, whatever. But we haven't had on either Draft Strickland or Pod Strickland, our other more general podcast, we haven't had someone like you on. And I thought it would be really dope just because, to be honest, the extent of discussion, you know, in Knicks fan land about agents, and it's really like, oh, let's talk about CAA, the gigantic, like, you know, the Facebook of the sports agency world, right? In some ways, or not even just sports agency, all agency, right? Because they're Hollywood, they're sports, they're all that. And, you know, there's a time and place to talk about them, but as a field and as a business, it's a whole lot more than that. So, but before we get into that, why don't you tell folks a little bit about yourself and what you do and how you got into this? Because I'm fascinated by all that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's something that, like, I've always wanted to do, you know, since I was younger. I mean, like, honestly, you know, I thought I'd be running, like, the Knicks by this point in my life.
There's still time.
I probably could. So if Leon wants to retire, you know, I'm in. I'll throw my resume in. But I spent probably like 2.5 years working for a sports analytics company here in New York City that did, you know, stat breakdowns and like cataloging. So like you could, like high school and college teams and like the AAU teams would submit like their film and stuff into our platform. And then like you could filter it out by like three pointers. You know, you could tag in your certain plays that you're running and like filter by just all those plays and stuff. And then unfortunately that company got sold. So I went to go back to working to the regular 9-to-5 like tech job, and it sucked. It was miserable. So I figured, you know, I have all these connections already. Let me just, you know, go take the test, see what happens. So I passed the test in 2019, sent a couple guys overseas, one guy to the G League working for myself. Then went to go work for another company. Something unfortunate happened that I can't go into detail about because it's still in court.
Sure.
But so then I kind of went back to working for myself. And then back in December, January-ish, reached out to a gentleman named Dooney Battle, who made himself famous representing Lil Pump. So he's made, you know, a lot of waves in the music industry. I reached out to him and said, like, hey, like, would you be interested in getting into sports and stuff? And he said, absolutely. So then we launched TLG Sports, which is a division of his, the Lights Global Company. And we're planning to do football, basketball, baseball. We got a bunch of guys lined up for, you know, this year's football draft. We came close on a couple of first round picks last year. Ultimately didn't get them for the NBA draft. And then we have a guy taking the baseball test in a couple of weeks, actually, which will be big because as fun as like basketball and football are, there's nothing like baseball money. So yeah. Nice to get a piece of that.
That's super helpful. And yeah, that's one of the things I was going to ask about. And we can circle back to that later, like the differences between baseball and and basketball and the other sports as far as, you know, trying to get kids into these leagues and stuff like that. But yeah, so just on a basic level, like this might be a dumb question, but and you tell me if this depends on like your goals or the goals of your company, and you know, other small agencies might be have different goals, but like obviously you want to get guys into the NBA, right? That's the big time, that's the big right. money, but like there's the G League, and there's nowadays more than ever you have other opportunities. Before it was just, you know, the G League. Now the G Leaguers make a little bit more money. You got the Ignite, you have the NBL in New Zealand and Australia, you have European leagues. You know, you have lots of different places to hoop, and plenty of players go over there before coming to the NBA. And these days, like, you could pick out, you know, you even look at the Bucks, who just won the chip, and they got obviously Giannis from overseas, but like PJ Tucker played in Europe for many years and was the MVP of the German league. People don't realize that. And then came back to the NBA finally. And you got guys who came from other countries and other pathways. There's a lot of more pathways into the league now than there were before. So like, how does that factor in when you're making plans both for yourself as an agent and as a company and for, you know, more importantly for the kids you work with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of different options nowadays. And, you know, especially now with like the G League and overtime doing their thing, even though there's some parts of the overtime thing I'm not, you know, too fond of.
I forgot about them. Yeah. I got some questions about that.
Yeah. We could definitely touch on that. And, you know, recruiting some of these kids that are like still in high school right now. Like I won't, names, specific names, but like there's some of them where it's like, all right, like, you know, this kid doesn't need to, you know, go to college. So like, I kind of want him to choose going to the G League now. So, you know, we could sign him now and get that all set up now. But, you know, you never really want to push them in certain directions because like some kids just flat out want the college experience.
Sure.
So, I mean, the G League's definitely changed things. I think it's extremely helpful because, I mean, you know, like, guys like Kuminga, like, there was really no business for Kuminga to step on a college campus.
Right.
You know, some guys, like, if you don't want to go to class, like, what's the point of going to class for a year just to play basketball?
Right.
So, I mean, it's definitely a lot of different ways guys can get into the league. But I think there's also, like, a lot of misconceptions, like, especially when it comes to Europe. And kind of, like, both ways. Like, a lot of players will refuse to like go to Europe if they go undrafted and stuff, and would rather, you know, sit around the G League for 4 or 5 years, and like they don't realize that one, you'll make a ton more money overseas initially, and like you can always go to overseas and come back. Like PJ Tucker did it, like plenty of guys have done it, so it's not, you know, something impossible to do. But then also like, there's a lot of college basketball players. There's a lot of seniors every year. And a lot of players like get, you know, in their head that I'm just going to go overseas and make, you know, 100 grand to start. And, you know, a couple years, we'll be making $1 million. Where like, honestly, like most of those seniors, you're talking like $500 a month, maybe $1,000 a month for like 6 months. And yeah, like your food and your rent and stuff is covered. Like, that's not, like, livable money. So, like, overseas, like, isn't this, like, you know, vast gold mine that, like, everyone thinks it is. Like, I would say probably, like, 700, maybe 800 of the jobs overseas will actually pay you, like, a good wage where, like, you know, you're 60, 70K a year or potentially, like, six figures. And then, obviously, like, the elite jobs that are, like, seven figures. So, like, really, like, to go overseas and, like, play basketball for a living, like, you still have to be one of the top, like, 1,000 players in the league, counting the 300-something NBA jobs and, you know, 600 or 700 overseas jobs. So overseas isn't what everyone kind of, like, assumes it is, but, like, it's definitely useful for guys to go overseas instead of, you know, toying around the G League. Because, like, the G League, how I kind of look at it is, you know, if you weren't drafted and sent down on a two-way contract, or, you know, they didn't sign, the team didn't sign you to an Exhibit 10 and send you down after training camp, you can go to the G League and make 30 grand a year, but, like, are you real? You're not in that team's plans. Like, so, like, that guy they drafted in the second round and sent to the G League, or that undrafted free agent they signed to an Exhibit 10, like, they're in their plans. Like, their plans to develop them. So, like, you would have to absolutely kill it in the G League to use that to get into the NBA if you're not, you know, one of those guys that kind of have priority over everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And to circle back to the overseas conversation real quick, one of the I think I like the way you put it about there being misconceptions kind of both ways, like, in terms of, like, how easy it is not, but also, like, the flexibility of it. Like, there's one of the most enlightening things that I've seen. I forget if it was on, I think it was an Instagram, some basketball account. You know how it is. You just follow, like, a million basketball accounts. Right. So one of the ones I followed, it had somebody talking about or tweeting about, like, some insane experience they had overseas. And I just opened the comments, and it was just other, it was just, like, an infinite amount of crazy stories in the comments of people hooping over. And of course, you know, not, you know, over, we're talking about overseas, like, it's one thing, but it's like, you're talking like 40 different leagues and, like, many different continents, really. Right. So, like, it can mean a million different things depending on where you're talking about. And some of the stories just, you know, in the more lower end sparse leagues, like, you're talking South America League, Central America, and stuff like that, the stories were crazy. It sounded like something from, like, a, like, the Hangover movie or something like that. Like, oh, like, I was robbed and had to walk on the highway with no socks, and now I'm, you know, friends with this family. Like, just wild stories. And
right,
you know, and, like, it just goes to show that, like you said, there's, like, 1,000 players, give or take, playing in the top leagues in the world. And then there's, like, another 5,000 players who are probably all really good in college or when they were teenagers, who are also trying to get into those spots.
Right. Right. And, I mean, like, overseas is insane. Like, obviously, like, you know, the stuff that will happen to guys, like, while they're overseas. But then also, like, you know, like, a lot of teams won't pay. Like, right, you know, you'll get paid for, like, 7 of your 8 months there. And then the 8th month, they're like, oh, like, well, we're not going to pay you, but we'll give you a contract for next year. And, like, you got to decide,
right,
what are you going to do? Do I bite the bullet and take them to FIBA arbitration, where you have to pay, I think it's like $7,500 to, like, file the claim. Both sides have to pay. But, like, if the other side refuses to pay it, like, you have to pay it. Jeez. So, like, is it worth it for that when you just take yourself a guaranteed contract? There's so many, like, scammers, like, as crazy as it sounds, like, I'll get emails with, like, fake contracts from people pretending to be, like, people from the teams. And I'm yet to, like, figure out, like, what the scam is. Like, sometimes they'll they'll say, like, oh, but we can't pay for your flight here, so, like, you know, send us the money and we'll book your flight. Like, that's an obvious, like, scam part. But then there's somewhere, like, they just flat out send the contract and it's fake. But, like, they're not getting your social security number. They're not asking you for flight money. It's like, what's the actual scam here? So I've kind of, like, really, like, stop doing, like, the lower level overseas stuff, just because, like, it's not worth it, like, financially. You know, you have guys making 200-300K a year over there, and the overseas fees are max 10%. Like, that's a lot different than, you know, taking 10% of, you know, $1,000 a month. You end up spending more time doing more work trying to get them overseas than it's worth in, you know, your commission and stuff.
Yeah, that definitely sounds about right. You only have so much time to spend, and even though basketball is worldwide and everywhere, nobody got worldwide everywhere kind of time. So
right.
you gotta pick and choose, and kind of, you know, piggybacking off of that, like as far as players stateside, you know, high school kids, college kids, you know, I know you mentioned that your previous experiences have informed how you're starting this company and, you know, the players you're trying to link up with in multiple sports. But like for basketball, how do you go about trying to figure out like who you want to work with in terms of clients, right? In terms of young basketball players. I mean, even stateside alone, you have obviously like hundreds of high schools, and you have junior college players who are super talented as well. You got guys from other sports. Like that seems like a lot of stuff to triangulate.
Right. No, I mean, like getting players, figuring out who is the toughest part. And if it wasn't hard, like, you know, everyone would be doing this. So, I mean, like the big thing is like relying on people, you know, I know, whether they're scouts for teams, they work independently in the media as scouts, on like who to go after. Because like a lot of people look good in college, but are they necessarily like NBA players? I think a good example is, you know, going and recruiting Trey Murphy last year. Like I was on Trey Murphy super early, probably back in like December, and like nobody had him in anyone's mock draft. Your boy Schwinden knows this. I was telling him everything. Like I was 100% on him early. This kid's a first round pick. He's going to go somewhere in the teens. Ended up going 17th. And like I would reach out to independent media people, not from like any of the big companies, and like they'd be like, oh, like, you know, teams always ask about him, they just don't know if he's gonna declare or not. And I was like, I'd put my money on it, like this kid probably declare. Like there's no shot this kid's gonna be worth staying another year. So I mean, a lot of it's that. I mean, a lot of it's also like personality and stuff, like, you know, trying to deal with kids that aren't gonna be headaches, that, you know, you don't have to worry about jumping ship in a year, because there's really nothing that you can do to keep someone with your agency. Like they could fire you for whatever reason, whenever reason. And yeah, you'll get the money you're owed in future years. Like the contract you did for them, but like there's nothing stopping them.
Right.
So, I mean, that's part of it. And then right now, like, you know, because we have the music side of the business that's attractive, like right now it's kind of looking for kids who want to do, you know, more than just basketball, because like, to be completely honest, and you know, a lot of rookies and stuff get blinded by the bigger agencies and don't, you know, really take this into mind that like, if you're a first round pick in the NBA, like there's really not much like your agent's going to be able to do for you. They'll maybe, you know, move you up a spot or two. But all that's pretty much on you and like what you're doing at the combine and like how your workouts go. So, I mean, part of our big pitch is pitching them, like, you know, we have all these connections other places. You know, you want to do VC work with some venture capital firms, like, you know, we can connect you there. Because, like, your first 3 years of basketball are pretty much set based on what you do at the combine. Like, there's not much negotiating. And, you know, there's some playing the game and some, you know, putting certain information out there from workouts and stuff that'll help rise you a little bit. But like 95% of guys, if you're a first round pick, like you're probably not going to rise too much because of something your agent did, you know, during the draft process. You could fall a lot based on something your agent did, but going up is less likely than people think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's because, you know, like those are the stories that are interesting, right? Those are the ones that get clicks. It's like, Pat Williams is rising up the boards. Like, that's cool. But, like, there's literally like one guy every year.
Right.
Maybe two. Like it was Trey this year, like you said, Trey Murphy.
Right. I mean, Trey rose a lot. But even like Pat Williams, like mm-hmm. if you were in the know, like everyone knew Pat Williams was going high.
Yeah.
Like I think the betting over under was like 6.5 that night or something. I told everyone, I was like, take the under. Like he's going top five. Like if you were in the know, you knew. That's where like, you know, a lot of basketball Twitter, especially Blue Check basketball Twitter, not so much like the writers. You know, the influencer, fake media, Blue Check basketball Twitter, like with the things they think and like the things they think about certain players and, you know, people on my side of the business is so like far away from reality. And like I won't name like specific names of agents and stuff, but like there's certain people that like have this reputation on basketball Twitter and teams have a completely different thinking of them. And they say like same thing with players. Like, you know, RJ Barrett gets a lot of hate by a certain section of like basketball Twitter. And like you ask anyone in the NBA, like people are super high on RJ Barrett.
One's worried about RJ. Anytime I get somebody on one of the pods I'm on who's like actually, if not in this, in the game in some way, in terms of their professional job, like tangentially adjacent to the game, like they might write about the game or they might have scouted or anybody like that. It's almost my RJ Barrett conversations with them are boring because it's just like, oh yeah, nobody's worried about RJ Barrett. Like,
right.
Sure, maybe he's not going to be LeBron, but like RJ Barrett will be fucking fine. Like, no, right. There's nothing to talk about. Like, so it is funny to see that those misconceptions, and I think a lot of the time people, you know, parts of, like anything, parts of the internet become an echo chamber, and then, you know, something that begins as a whisper ends up as a shout, and you think it's more of a fact or more of a solid bet than it really is. And one of the things I try to always remember, you know, like draft Twitter in particular is an interesting place because there's more people who are now interested in this stuff casually than there was back in the day, right? Like,
right.
So you have a lot of people learning about scouting and learning about a bunch of different ways to evaluate players. And I mean, I'm as amateur as it gets. I'm just some guy who does a podcast for fun. And I started basically when the Knicks drafted Porzingis, that was the first time I got really interested in this stuff. Like I had always followed the draft, but that was the first time I began to nerd out. And like I remember who I liked and didn't like in the Porzingis draft and the draft after that. And like I have been humbled so many times by horrible takes that I try not to make my own takes. Like I'll have a few hot takes every year, but like I'm also not tripping over like if somebody has a wildly different one than me, like I'm not just gonna be like, they don't know ball, like you know.
Right.
You get a lot of that and it gets a little silly.
Way too much of that. And like even when it comes to me like scouting guys, like I don't take my own opinion as, you know, 100% fact. I ask tons of people because like everyone looks like a good basketball player. Like they wouldn't be playing D1 college basketball if like they weren't a good basketball player. So, I mean, I even saw like something floating around Twitter, some, I guess, semi-conspiracy thing that like the Knicks didn't take Sharif Cooper based on his one-on-one game versus somebody else. And it's like,
Deuce, my boy.
It's like, no, I mean, they just didn't take Sharif because like Sharif doesn't fit prototypical Tibbs point guard. Like not everything's some giant conspiracy, like, you know, he just didn't fit. Like, Sharif's a great player. I wouldn't have minded Sharif on the Knicks, but, like, he just doesn't fit what they were trying to do.
You're right. Teams have visions for what fits and what doesn't, and sometimes I disagree with them, and sometimes I don't, but, like, it is what it is, right? Like, we know we have enough now that we know Leon Rose's front office has a type for the most part. They like guys who can pull up shoot, and they like guys who could lock up on defense, or at least have shown that sometimes they can lock up on defense. And
right.
You look at like whether it's the overseas guys like Luka Vildoza or the young guys like Deuce McBride or the older free agent signings like Alec Burks, like all of these guys are dudes who try on defense and can put it on the floor and shoot. And there's a few exceptions, you know, like Reggie Bullock and guys like that who
right.
he's not really breaking any ankles, but he still play defense. So like Sharif just not, he's just not their type. You know, I got types. When I was single, I had types. Everybody got types, man. So you can't trip too much over it. One thing you touched on that I think is really interesting is like the work, because so much of the, of a young man's basketball fate is really determined by their own effort, right? Like by their own work,
right.
their own, like how much work they put in, what they do in the workouts. Do they wake up early to put in extra work? Like what about their training and stuff like that? So like, just before we get to the off the court stuff, like trying to provide good situations for them as professionals and as human beings, like you were kind of alluding to before, like in terms of the on the court stuff, is there like how much of a role do you have in talking to them about or connecting them with other folks who can impact the actual basketball, whether it's like on the physical development or on the skills training or any of that stuff? Or is that mostly like they're going to do whatever they're going to do and you're just kind of along for the ride on that?
I mean, when it comes to like the pre-draft process, like we have my guy Jay who does our training and stuff. But like, you know, if a kid wants to use their own trainer, like, you know, we'll let them use their own trainer. You know, there's, it's kind of flexible based, you know, on what they want to do. At the end of the day, like, we'll do whatever is going to get us a kid. So if they want to, you know, not be down in Miami doing their training and want to be somewhere else training with their guy, like, that's fine. But, you know, we'll be part of the process still. And, you know, the biggest thing, and Ronnie Taylor down in Miami, who trains like Bam and a bunch of other guys. You know, one of the things he told to me earlier this year when, you know, we were talking to him and he was trying to help us out with a couple guys was that, like, you really got to know what to control, especially on social media. Like, you never want to post your workouts and post something on your social media from a workout that's going to expose something that you don't want teams to see. Because then, like, one, they'll make sure they're going to make you do that in the workout and see it up close in person. And that kind of takes away your leverage of being able to, like, script your workout and, you know, not do those things that might fall you, cause you to drop in your workout and stuff. So, like, I mean, we're still definitely part of the process and, you know, making sure they're hitting everything they need to do and making sure, you know, whatever feedback you're getting from teams and, you know, that they're taking that into account in their workouts. You know, if it's a kid that's got to put weight on their body, you know, making sure they're set up in a program that's like going to take care of that and do that for them. So, I mean, a lot of it's just personal preference of the kid, but even if they're using their own guy, like we'll still be in the mix and, you know, kind of guide and mold the program to, know what's at the end of the day going to get them drafted higher and stuff.
Yeah, I would imagine it's like almost like here's what we can offer you, and like depending on the kid's personality or the personalities of other people in the kid's orbit, it's, you know, is it a very collaborative kind of process? Like, you know, a lot of these kids, they've been training, they've been thinking about this for a while, right? They've probably already had at least one major injury because youth basketball is crazy. And,
right.
you know, so there's a lot of stuff going on, and there's doctors and parents and family and trainers and all of that stuff. So in a lot of ways, it must be, it's people management, right?
No, yeah. I mean, it's definitely people management. And, you know, I think with us, especially with the kids we're recruiting for this year and, like, the next couple of years, like, it's pretty collaborative. But, like, you know, we're going to run everything out of Miami. Mm-hmm. You know, they've seen some of the non-basketball related stuff that we have going on down there. We're building an office like most kids. Like we say, yeah, like, you know, we're going to run everything down in Miami. Like, you'll come down here for 2 months and like, they don't want to go anywhere else. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely collaborative and trying to figure out what, you know, the kid wants in an agency. Like some kids don't want, you know, big agencies, some do, some want to go follow the big time players and stuff. So yeah, I mean, a lot of it's trying to figure out, you know, what they want, what they need, and can, if it's not, you know, what we had in mind, can we, you know, adjust our game plan and like make it work?
Word. That makes a lot of sense. Along the same lines, like off the court, you mentioned like the music as like a, you know, or and the music or the exploring the world of like VC firms and stuff like that. How much of, I guess, tapping into a person's interests like that at a young age is learning about them before you agree to work with them versus like, you know, you've agreed to work, you're obviously, you know, the goal is to get this kid drafted, and then you, you know, learn more about what else makes them tick and what else interest them and that sort of stuff. Like, is it like a chicken and the egg situation? Like, certain kinds of kids are drawn to that sort of those sort of offers and benefits, or is that more like, after we're here for hoops, but also we know you're not a basketball robot, like, let's talk about what else you are interested in?
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of that's stuff you try to find out beforehand, you know, whether it's from their trainer, from their handler, from anyone else who they're close to, because you want that to be part of your pitch going into them. But also, like, some kids literally just only want to talk about basketball. Like, they don't really care about the marketing or any of the off the court stuff. Like, they just want to play basketball. So it's like, depending on the kid, depends kind of how you go about it. But, you know, being a smaller agency, like, we kind of need to pitch on that type of stuff because we need to set ourselves apart. Like, all right, like, you know, don't go sign with Clutch. Come sign with us. We'll be able to do everything basketball for you for Clutch. But we'll make sure, you know, you're taken care of on this other stuff, even if, you know, you're not the top guy on our roster. So it's kind of a delicate balance of figuring out, you know, how much to push on certain stuff. Because, I mean, there's some kids we've recruited that, you know, at the table sitting down, like, they didn't want to talk about basketball. They only wanted to talk about, you know, the off-the-court stuff. Because they kind of realized basketball's on them and how they perform. So, you know, they just wanted to see what we could do off-the-court for them.
I think something that people don't talk enough about on Twitter is, like, if you're even trying to get to the league and you're serious about it, then you have to be pretty driven as far as the basketball stuff goes. Like, pretty much everybody who goes into the NBA has some level of insane work ethic, it seems like. Like, we all hear the stories about the people who are above and beyond, of course, like, you know, like Kobe or Russ or KD or whoever, but like even guys, quote unquote, at the end of the rosters are fucking basketball junkie lunatics and probably put in a lot of work. So I could see why, like, a lot of the young dudes who approach y'all are like, no, I have a vision for what I need to do for the basketball. Like, talk to me about the other stuff.
Right. And I mean, like, you can get to the NBA having a bad work ethic, but you'll be, you know, over in Europe within a year or two. Like, you can get there just over pure talent and ceiling and, you know, what an NBA team thinks they can turn you into. But, like, if you're not going to work, like, you're not going to be there long.
Yeah, once the genie's out of the bottle, as far as that goes, it's hard to put it back in, I would imagine. Cool. Yeah, that's gotta be weird if you end up like I understand you wanna you know, you want to get clients and you want to get the kids and you want to get them drafted. But like, if you get a kid who's doesn't have a great work ethic, like, there's definitely still reason to work with kids like that, because of course maybe you could help them improve that, right? Or maybe right. you could still get them into the league and somebody else could help them improve that. But like, I'd probably be like, all right, see you later, and then just be in, you know, in my car like, damn, won't this fucking kid like put in some more work? Like, I'd be frustrated.
No, definitely. I mean, that's why, like, you know, there's definitely kids that are projected, you know, top 15, top 20 picks that like won't even go after, because like, you know what, that's not a situation that we kind of want to deal with right now, because, you know, I don't have, you know, Jeff Schwartz type experience at Excel. So like, it's nature of the business. Like, I can't get the same pull and favors that like Jeff Schwartz has. So like, if you're not going to work, that's going to make my job a whole lot harder. And like, I really don't want to deal with that right now. So yeah, I mean, that's why we do a lot of like background and ask, you know, as many people as possible, like what they think of this kid. Does he have, one, the talent, and, you know, does he want it enough to, you know, go through this process and be an NBA player?
Yeah. The way I have a friend who he works for a different team now, but he used to work for the Thunder at some point, and the way he would always he was a scout, and he would always describe it to me as like, you're, you know, with kids who get drafted, they're overnight millionaires for the right. most part. So like, do you have the work ethic to become a millionaire overnight and then continue to operate as if like your paycheck depends on you putting in the work? Because that's like how 90% of the NBA dudes are. And even just like talking about myself, like forget basketball, like if you apply that to like any other field, like I'm a lawyer, and like if you told me I got $1 million tomorrow, I am absolutely not working as hard tomorrow. Are you kidding me? It's not even close. Like, my work ethic is good, but NBA, this is what I mean. Like, pro players are on a different level in a lot of ways. So I definitely see why the clock is ticking on people who don't have that level of intensity. One thing we mentioned before that I'm just curious about, like, because y'all do multiple sports, so just the landscape of the sports is so different. Like we were talking about all the different leagues and situations for basketball. Meanwhile, in football, it's like you could count the options on one hand, right? And then in baseball, you can count the options. I mean, there's other leagues and other places, but it's also way different because there's like a bazillion minor league spots available.
Right.
All over the country. So like, you must basically have to become an expert in like all of that stuff.
Right. Like, I mean, like, part of the reason why I chose basketball over baseball is, you know, you get a kid and he gets drafted, like, you're possibly waiting 7 years before he gets like a big contract. And then, like, football, you need, like, a master's degree and stuff to even get the license, and zero chance I was going back to school. Not going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, getting kids in basketball is definitely a lot tougher than any other sport. Because, like, I mean, you look at football, there's 7 rounds. 200 some of the people get drafted. Like, so you can get, you know, a couple guys who didn't really play too much at a D1 school, or like a kid who was a starter on a non-power five school, put up decent numbers, and all right, yeah, they get drafted in, you know, the fourth or fifth round, and then they got their shot, they made the most of their shot, and like they make it and they get a second and third contract in the NFL, and like it's all good. Like basketball, there's 2 rounds, so like, you know, you can throw less darts at the dartboard and see what happens with basketball, because the investment to, you know, put a kid through the draft process is immense. And, you know, what's the realistic chance that, you know, your kid who came off the bench and played, you know, 10 minutes at North Carolina is actually going to, you know, grind up from the G League on an Exhibit 10 even and, you know, make the NBA. Like, the odds are against that. Like, it's, you know, the stats are first-round picks have longer, you know, careers. One, because, you know, the better players are more likely to go earlier. And, you know, there are some misses. Some guys in the second round are better than top five picks. But, you know, it's all an inexact science and a guessing game. And, you know, football is way easier to recruit probably than even, like, baseball. Because, I mean, baseball is even more of a crapshoot in terms of guys who are going to make it or not. You know, how many top 10 high school picks in baseball, like, oh, this kid's future MLB superstar, and, you know, get hurt, or, you know, year five of the minors, like, still not producing, and, like, now you're almost 30. And so, I mean, football's definitely easier. Basketball's just tougher because, like, you do – now you have, you know, all right, I have to go head-to-head with CAA, Excel, Clutch for the same 60, 70-ish kids, you know, counting guys who are top guys who go undrafted and get signed. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot harder. And, again, it's still an inexact science. Like, yeah, I was dead right on Trey Murphy. But, you know, there's definitely guys who I was like, oh, let's go after this guy. Like, he'll definitely get drafted. And then they don't. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying before is, like, if – like, it's an inexact science. Like, he's still in the league for now, but, like, I loved Grant Riller. I was famous on – not famous. I shouldn't say famous. No one's fucking famous on draft. I was known as, like –
I think they're famous on draft.
Right, exactly. I was Grant Riller's number one fan on draft Twitter. Let's put it that way. And then, you know, he fell because of knee concerns. He didn't get drafted, and – got some time in the G League, but it's hard, like you said, like, you got to be, like, the MVP of the G League to be, like, really to make noise out here, so it's tough. And I was just so sure he was going to be great. And I mean, he's still young, so, like, Grant Riller, if you're listening to this, I'm still rooting for you, but, like, it just shows you how much of a crapshoot it is and how tough it is in basketball. So I, you know, definitely tip my cap to you for pursuing that challenge, because that's a tough road to walk, but it seems like it's the sort of thing where you gotta, like you said, you gotta want to do it, right? Like you said, you wanted to do this for a minute, and I suspect that many people in the business who fall into it by coincidence and don't love doing it probably aren't gonna last very long doing it.
No, I mean, definitely not. Like, you got to want to do this job. And, like, you know, people hit me up on LinkedIn and stuff all the time for advice. Stuff like, oh, I've always wanted to do this. Like, you know, can you help me pass the test and stuff? And, like, I'll always, you know, give them advice and all my notes and stuff from when I took the test. But at the same time, say, like, you know, it's not what you expect. You know, all the seedy, shady stuff that, you know, you hear about is true. And, you know, like when I took the test, there was two sessions. So it was like probably 150 people in my session, 150 people in the session after me. So that's like 300 people taking the test. And let's say even 60% of them pass. That's 180, like, new agents, plus the agents already representing players. So, like, plus the people who have passed the test and still don't represent players. So you're talking potentially like thousands of agents representing 300 something players. Like, majority of those people are never going to have an NBA client. And yeah, I mean, you have to want it, because you're going to throw, like, even when I was just doing, you know, the overseas guys, myself, and like they were just low level overseas guys. Like, I didn't really cover like too much of their expenses, but it's still put me in the red probably like 10-15 grand, you know, my own money and stuff, trying to do this. So, like, it's expensive, it's stressful, it's,
yeah, I'm not about that life.
It's a dirty business. So I mean, you're a lawyer, so
Well, that's I was gonna make a joke. Like, I know plenty of lawyers who don't want to do this and don't care right. about it and are still successful. That's what I'm saying. It's, that's what the big difference is.
You gotta right. want it. Yeah, you gotta want it because it's definitely not easy. And you know, there's so many guys even from this year's draft process that, you know, sign with someone and then 3 weeks before the draft, like, switch agents.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, you definitely have to want it because it's great. It's fun. Like, I love it. You know, I spend most of my days watching basketball, like, going to games. Like, I'm going to sit at a desk for, you know, 10 hours a day. Like, it's fun. It's great. Don't get me wrong. But, like, it's also stressful. And it's even more stressful probably when you have 6 or 7, you know, top players as your clients. Like, obviously, like, you know, the money's way better. But, like, you know, it's still stressful as shit too. So I'm hoping to, like, hit the jackpot soon, like, retire maybe in like 10 years. Because that'd be nice.
It would be nice. You know, I'd be a bad host if I got you on this pod and I didn't ask you if there was any particular guys from this NBA, from this last NBA draft who, aside from Trey, who just, you know, with your scouting hat on rather than your agent hat, who you're a fan of.
Ooh. I mean, I was a big fan of Deuce. I think Deuce probably should have went higher than he did end up going. Let me think who else. Who else? I mean, there was a couple guys that went back that didn't go into this draft. That I was after, that I really love, like Benedict Mathurin, who's going into this year's draft.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, he,
I was hoping he would go.
Yeah, I mean, he's one. If he went this year, like, I think he would have been a top 10 pick.
Yeah,
loved him. I'm trying to think. I mean, I'll say, not to, like, you know, keep giving my Knicks too much credit. Like, I do love Quentin Grimes.
We will allow it on this podcast.
I mean, Scotty Barnes, I know, like, Scotty Barnes had his concerns, but I think Scotty Barnes is going to be very good for the Raptors.
Yeah, me and Schwinn were talking about Scotty on the last pod because he's kind of, like, confusing to me and Schwinn because he's obviously, like, a, you know, 6'10 physical specimen who's, like, plays some point guard but, like, can't shoot yet. And I'm like, he could be just, like, a weird bench player for 10 years, or he could be, like, a superstar. I have no fucking idea.
Right.
So.
And that's, yeah, I mean, that's a crazy, like, I think he'll end up closer to the superstar part.
Yeah.
Just from, like, knowing his personality and stuff.
Yeah.
And then who else? I mean, obviously, like, everyone loved Davion Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, Kai Jones. Kai Jones is another kid, like, early on, was like, this kid's probably the best player on this Texas team, and this kid's going to go in the first round. He was one. Who was in the second round that I'm trying to think?
Speaking of second round, one thing I actually forgot to write down that I wanted to ask is, I have no idea, like, this is just, like, rumor or whatever, but is it true that, like, if you're a prospect and you're going into the second round, you're projected to go into the second round or whatever, like, you have more control potentially over where you land? Because what I heard was that, like, this year, at least, a not insignificant number of players basically tried to, who were sure they were going to go in the second round, tried to just navigate their way to destinations that they saw were favorable. Like, I heard that was one of the reasons why Sharif fell, is because he was like, all right, if I'm going to go in the second round, I want to go to Atlanta, my home, like, where right. I like, and a good team that got shooters to cover for me, and Trey, a player I can model my game after, and, you know, kind of like that.
Right. I mean, like, there's some maneuvering you can do, and a lot of that will come from, you know, refusing to work out for certain teams. And I mean, the second round is really where an agent can have a lot more impact, because like that full contract is negotiable.
Exactly.
So like, you could, I mean, in theory, you could probably make it known from the jump, like, all right, you know, if you do take my guy in the second round, like let's say a team gives you a second round guarantee. It's like, all right, you know, you're going to take my guy in the second round. Like, just so you know, like, we want a fully guaranteed, 2-year fully guaranteed contract. And that might make some teams balk. Some teams, like, you know, kind of want to do a 1-1 type of thing. So if they think, you know, you might play hardball with that, maybe they pass on you for someone else in the second round. Obviously, like, navigating destinations a lot easier, you know, when you're going undrafted. But,
right.
I mean, I think that kind of brings up another, like, misconception where, like, a lot of kids are, you know, first round, oh, I got to be a first round pick, else I'm not going to leave college. Which obviously, you know, first round pick's ideal and stuff. But like, you could also go back to college, try to be a first round pick, and then end up undrafted. So, I mean, the second round's not bad. You know, you still got drafted. And then also, like, if you're the player you think you are and you're that first round pick you think you are, you're getting your second contract 2 years before anyone else that went in the first round getting paid. So second rounds, there's definitely misconceptions that, you know, everyone wants to be in the green room and, you know, walk up on stage and, you know, get that guaranteed first round contract and stuff. But like, the second round's not bad. And I kind of wish a lot more kids bought into that. Like, hey, like, you know, second round's not terrible. I could probably go this year.
Right. You could, there's advantages, as crazy as it sounds, to going in the second round. And it sounds like maybe, you know, we wish more kids realized that, but it sounds like some people are at least learning about that. Cause I think this is just me speculating, but like, you know, I considered this year's second round to be a little funky because, you know, at first it was like, wow, how could this player drop so far and that player drop so far? And look at these weird trades. And, you know, thinking about it in the days after, you know, you look at what the Knicks did. They did a bunch of trades, most of which were involving late first and second round maneuvers. And
right.
And I'm almost certain that, like, some of those decisions were influenced by players and agents trying to get to the Knicks or to other teams. And so we're probably going to have a funky second round this next year. And it's only going to get more funky when you introduce, like, you know, now maybe there's going to be 2 G League Ignites, or, you
right.
know, now there's Overtime Elite, which I don't know. What are they going to do? Just play themselves for the whole year? I still don't understand how that's going to work.
I think that's like part of their plan. I think they're going to try to like play the Ignite team. And stuff. But I mean, I think where they kind of put themselves in a rough spot was initially wanting to take, you know, 30 kids, whatever their number was. So I do feel like right now they're kind of signing kids that aren't, you know, just 2 years away from being in the NBA. So like, what's the plan for year 3 of this kid? If he's not what would be a 1-and-done player. So I mean, that's definitely been a little concerning to me. Whereas like the G League, you know, they're just obviously, besides Scoot Henderson, who signed a 2-year, like they're still doing the 1-year, or, you know, only doing it with top kids, where it's like, all right, this kid's pretty much a first round guarantee, like if everything stays the way it is. So yeah, Overtime, I think their idea and concept is good. I think it's to be determined on whether it's going to work the way they want it to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be interested in seeing how that happens. And, you know, the kids who are good are going to be good no matter what, like the top end of that Overtime Elite crop. I'm more just interested how it impacts the less heralded players on those rosters.
Right.
We'll see. It seems like a little bit less stable of a situation than
right.
you know.
Because, I mean, like, if you look at the guys who did Ignite last year, like, they, like, none of their stocks were, like, rose too much. Like, they all kind of went where they were supposed to go. So, like, all right, I'm a 3-star signing to overtime as a high school junior. How are you getting into the first round? So, like, that's going to be a big concern. But it isn't an exact science. Maybe they see something in these kids that, like, everyone else is missing. I mean, like, Dubrin, like, just to prove how tough figuring out who's going to get drafted is, Jericho Sims. Like, someone early on, too, in the season, hit me up and was like, yeah, like, you should go after Jericho Sims. And, like, I just didn't see it. It's like, yeah, he'll get a shot in the NBA. Like, is somebody going to, like, draft him even in, like, the second round? Like, I just don't see it. And then, you know, didn't go after Jericho Sims, and then Jericho Sims got drafted in the second round. So it's – a lot of it's just throwing darts and taking your best guesses. So, like, maybe overtime's onto something with some of these kids. I hope so, but we'll see.
Yeah, Jericho's a really good example. Just, you know, looks like your standard older, more athletic running dunk guy, right, in college on some level. But figuring out which of those athletic running dunk guys is going to be, you know, an impact NBA player versus just a tall hooper somewhere else is tricky. Like in our group chat for the Strickland, we talked about how Jericho really matches the kind of center that the Knicks assistant GM Walt Perrin has drafted, you know, in his Jazz days, right? He's like tall, athletic guys, and you look at Mitch Robinson. So, like, from that lens, in retrospect, it's easy to say, but beforehand, like, it's pretty tough to predict. So, I definitely appreciate you embracing that, you know, there's a lot of information you can collect to make your educated guesses, but a lot of this is still educated guesses at the end of the day.
And right.
That's something us on Twitter could stand to appreciate a little bit more. I've kept you here for almost an hour, so and learned a lot. So this has been really dope for me. So thank you. Anything you want to shine a light on, whether it's a website or any things that you got cooking up or just your Twitter handle or anything, please let us know. And right now, and I'm happy to link to it when we post this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just tell everyone to go follow the Lights Global Sports on Instagram because we need some more followers there desperately. So do that, and that's pretty much it.
Follow right now. I was already following you, but I didn't follow you. All right, Anthony Rhea, everyone. Know where to find the man. Throw him a follow. Go TLG a follow. Get some humbleness in your draft predictions, you scoundrels. And Anthony, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, man, enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, and I'll hop on again soon. The New York Knicks select.